right on the money. Your arms hanging by your sides. We're not ready for that just yet, are we? Are we really ready for a world where anything you want can become reality? Where anything you need is produced as soon as you think about it? I'm not so sure. Anybody out there remember Forbidden Planet? I think we'll ask about exactly that in a moment. My guest is Sir Charles Schulz III. We'll get back to him in a moment. I would like to remind everybody out there that I am as close as your keyboard. You can get hold of me by email in the following manners. I am Art Bell, ArtBell, at AOL.com. That's ArtBell at AOL.com. Or perhaps better, ArtBell at Mindspring.com. That's ArtBell at Mindspring.com. And I welcome any input anybody has, any questions about the Philippines, for example. A lot of people sending me questions about the Philippines. Be glad to answer what I can. Certainly any stories, strange, the unusual, the kind of thing we cover here on Coast. I'd appreciate any links or any information anybody has. You can be pretty sure if it's good, it's going to get aired. Sir Charles, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you.
Charles, in Berkeley, California, I thought that was utopia, at any rate. He says, a bit too utopian for me. Remember the film Forbidden Planet and the monsters from the id? There, the Krell could have anything they could dream, and they were killed by the manifestation of the of their own subconscious demons. In fact, doesn't nanotechnology almost have that potential promise?
Well, it does in many ways, because without some sort of control or restriction on what we produce, Right. Then we literally could produce anything, and so it could be a threat. And so you can be sure that at some point there's going to be the equivalent of a nano police, some sort of nanoparticles in the atmosphere or in a room or some sensor system that will be able to detect things that would be considered dangerous or at least render them harmless. Mm. That's the only way we could ever get around it.
Hmm. Again, back to this utopian society, I think we were onto something when we said, well, perhaps you would have to earn your right to get there, to prove that you had socially evolved to the point where you could responsibly have anything you wanted. But that would lead to a world of, the same world we have now of the haves and the have-nots, right?
Well, you always will, but a lot of times, you know, we have to decide whether the haves and have-nots got there because of a lack of material or a lack of incentive. I know a lot of people who are quite capable of performing who will not because they've got what they want and they're happy. And there are other people who are never quite happy with anything they have, and they continue to fight and struggle all the time. But I think that even though we lose money as a currency in a nanotech world, we have another type of currency that will emerge most likely, and that would be information. So, and information can take many forms. It can be, you know, factual information or entertainment or a structure of a new device or a design of something. So we won't actually be in a world completely without some sort of currency or trade.
Well, a lot of people worry that the U.S., for example, is on the wrong track right now. We are clearly an information society. And people will say, well, it's not worth anything. You need factories. You need to build things. And maybe they're wrong. Maybe the information society that we're building in the U.S. is really the right track after all.
Well, that could well be, but we always have to have the basic infrastructure in place. I mean, it's not glamorous, but people have to grow food and handle plumbing and put up drywall, and transportation has to be handled. So
at the moment,
power and food, I mean, those are things we've got to have.
Uh-huh. At the moment, but in a full-blown nanotechnological society, those things could be wished for and then manifested.
Well, that's right. And then you get to the point of what your power source is, where it's generated from, and how much there is. You know, you can bet that petroleum would really not be the way to go because of how it stores and produces its energy. Sunlight would be the way to go, and possibly, you know, some advanced form of fusion reaction, perhaps, for power, or something we've never even conceived of. But nanotechnology means that as long as you've got basic raw atoms to work with, you can make literally anything.
Okay. Hello there. You're on the air with Sir Charles.
Hi, Sir Charles. This is Justin in Phoenix. How are you doing tonight, Art?
Just fine, sir.
All right, sounds great. I'm a longtime listener, love the show. One question I had for Sir Charles was when he was talking about resurrecting as far as using nanotechnology to bring us back from the dead and what he was speaking of, would that basically mean that we're no longer human? We don't have any souls anymore if we're just replications of what we used to be. Another question I have is, would we be able to bring people that are dead right now back from the dead with nanotechnology? And also, if you have seen the movie Lawnmower Man, have you seen that movie at all, Sir Charles?
I saw it many years ago, yes.
That's kind of like a way that you said if somebody had that kind of that power, that it could possibly be abused that way as well. But I just wanted to know your take on that. Does that it may be religious and then scientific, but does that mean that we would no longer have a soul?
Well, that's a very good question. I guess I could counter with another question. First of all, I don't think that we would lose our humanity just because we had used nanotech to repair any damage. I mean, presently we use a lot of medical technologies that never existed, you know, in the wild to perform treatment and to help us through our lives, but we don't consider ourselves less than human. If you, however, use nanotechnology to make an exact duplicate of yourself that had all of your memories and everything, would the duplicate have no soul? If you couldn't tell the two apart, how could you tell who did and did not have a soul? It raises some very interesting theological questions because it comes right down to what is a soul and where does it come from. As far as resurrection of the dead, it's all going to depend on how well your nanotech works and how much damage has been inflicted on the dead. It may be very possible to repair the body no matter what's been done to it, but if you can't get the brain to work properly, I don't think you'd want an immortal maniac on your hands.
That's right. That's correct. But there are people currently cryogenically freezing themselves on the promise of exactly this kind of technology coming along. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that it is very possible that nanotech offers their best hope for repairing those bodies that have been frozen and whatever damage has been done by the freezing process. As many people aren't aware, when you freeze water, the ice forms crystals, and the crystals tend to act like little growing knife blades and penetrate the cell walls and destroy the machinery inside the cells. And, of course, they've come up with a number of different antifreeze compounds that help to alleviate a lot of that damage, and there's other freezing methods they can use. For instance, if you were to take the body and put it in a pressure chamber under thousands of pounds of pressure and then freeze it, it would form a new type of ice that didn't make those crystals and destroy the cells. After the freezing had been done, the pressure could be removed and they could be changed down to another chamber where they're like near the temperature of liquid helium, and they could last for many thousands of years with very little damage. But nanotech would afford you the possibility of repairing any freeze damage. Absolutely.
Have you given a lot of thought to immortality? You mentioned the fact that you'd have to stop reproduction, and I suppose that's true. But beyond that, do you think that's really something that people would want, Sir Charles?
It's all going to depend on their state of mind. If you have an interesting existence and you like what you do and there's always another challenge in front of you, you would probably be very happy to live an existence where it was easy not to have to fight for a living every day and struggle to get the bills paid and not have to compete with others on a daily basis. I could see where you could have a very interesting and entertaining and very full life for many thousands of years, all based on your frame of mind. But some people are always going to be miserable, and I don't think those people would ever want to live that long. And I don't know if I'd want to be around somebody who lived that long who was miserable.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sir Charles. Hi.
Hi, this is Sophia from Eureka, California.
Hi there.
Hi, Art, and hi, Sir Charles.
Hello.
I had a question about immortality, and basically I'm wondering if somebody could will themselves to grow back a limb, for instance. Could you will yourself to gain kind of like superhuman abilities?
You know, there are some possibilities of enhanced ability through nanotechnology. I mean, it's easy to see that if you were to alter the structure of your joints and bones and muscles to a much more durable material and something that could have more energy throughput, you could be extremely strong and extremely tough. And probably, you know, that will be one of the first things they start doing with nanotechnology when the technology is ripe. But as far as whether you'd want to do it on a regular basis, I think there would be some very severe disadvantages. For instance, all of the things around us are constructed from materials that are designed to work with absolutely normal human beings. And if you made yourself so strong and so impervious that you were effectively a super being, it's quite likely that you would wreck a lot of things around yourself and not even be aware of it. And just imagine the people you know who are just intrinsically clumsy, who are always stumbling over or tripping on things or stepping on things, and then just imagine them 10 or 100 times stronger and doing the same sort of damage.
Oh, my God. The whole thing is hard to imagine. First time caller line, your turn with Sir Charles.
Sorry. It's good to talk to you. And Sir Charles, very, very good. A physics problem. I was wondering if it would be possible to, David Derrida had talked about raising the resonance of a structure or a ship so that it could overcome inertia. So 90-degree turns would no longer be a problem because it would no longer be a part of this atmosphere.
Okay. Inertia, as many people may know, is the resistance to change in movement or the change in velocity. Any material object has mass and as a consequence has inertia. If you were to have like a wagon and put a ball in the wagon and then pull the wagon, the ball would roll back momentarily because it resists the acceleration. That's inertia. Well, we don't really know exactly what causes inertia in terms of physics. Some people feel that it's caused by something called the Higgs vector boson, a particle that may be the cause of mass in solid objects or in any material object. Until we truly understand where the origin of inertia is, and it seems to be linked somehow with mass and gravitation, until we truly understand it, we couldn't really make a projection about what nanotech could do for us in that regime.
So we first have to understand the effect itself, and then there might or might not be an application for nanotech. Is nanotech going to ripen quickly, or is it going to be very slow?
Well, I believe that's going to depend on what aspects we're looking at. When it comes to materials and medications and products, we're going to see extremely rapid development of some of those things. When it comes to nanorobotics, that's an entirely different thing. Robotics itself is in a tough field. You can make any sort of robotic manipulator or sensor you can imagine. And with nanotech, it means you can do even more of the same. But again, we're right up against the intelligence end of it, you know, the software wall. Until people get their act together on exactly what thinking is and get some agreement on the definitions, they can't make any real progress in it, whether we have nanotech or not.
All right. Wildcard line. I'm sorry. You're on the air with Sir Charles.
Hello, Art. Hi, Sir Charles. Hey, my question runs along the lines of the way people think. We obviously would have a wonderful society if everybody thought positively and if everybody abided by the rules and, you know, things like that. But what about people that are violent and things like that? How do you think nanotechnology would work to curb that kind of behavior?
I have a very good suggestion about that. When it comes down to allowing people to have nanotechnology applied to themselves for life extension or medical treatment, if you get to the point where you have an individual who has demonstrated, you know, an inability to function in a society, a criminal or, you know, somebody who is habitually violent or even mentally ill, I think what you would have to do is give them the choice of allowing themselves to be repaired.
Repaired.
That's a very broad term. The problem is there's a possibility of great abuse with that, as with anything. So it's hard to say. I mean, if we can arrive at a point where we trust what nanotech is going to do for us and it's able to do what we want, and somebody says, you know, I want to live 1,000 years or 1,000,000 years, and I want the treatment, you're going to have to find out a lot about them psychologically. And I think nanotech will allow us to do that, to see exactly what they're thinking and how, and then some sort of judgment process will have to be applied to see whether they're allowed to do it or whether they need to have themselves edited in some way to be socially acceptable so they're not violent.
Edited. That's interesting. Yeah. Perhaps a bit of attendance at some sort of nanotechnological re-education farm.
Quite possibly, or some regulator installed in the brain.
Oh, boy. Wildcard line, you're on the air with Sir Charles. Hi.
Art, Sir Charles. I heard you mention doctors name that was treating Alzheimer with gold. Could you repeat that to me, please?
Yes, it's Marcelo Kogan, and it's in the University of Chile in Santiago. And his last name is spelled K-O-G-A-N.
K-O-G-N. University.
No. K-O-G-A-N, right?
That's correct.
K-O-G-A-N?
Yes.
And the first name?
Marcelo. M-A-R-C-E-L-O.
And this was at the university where?
Santiago in Chile. Chile in Santiago.
So I would presume he can probably go input that name to Google and be on his way. Is there something on the web about it?
Yes, there is. In fact, there's an article published in physorg.com, and if he puts it in Google, he'll find the article, I'm sure.
Good enough. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Sir Charles Schulz. Hi.
Hello, Art. This is Jeff from Portland, Oregon. Hello, Sir
Hi,
Charles.
Jeff.
Yeah, I've got two real quick questions. One is, what's the relationship between quantum physics and nanotechnology? And you'd indicated that once these little factories get running, that it would be almost impossible to distinguish the originals from copies. And I remember listening to Art and when he was interviewing Michel,
Dr. Kaku? Yes.
Yeah, yes. And he indicated that with quantum physics that you could basically create a system where you had a secure system as a result of quantum physics. Would that be a way of protecting an original from a copy?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a possibility. The only thing is you'd have to have some way of putting a digital signature or a quantum signature on an object that couldn't be duplicated. And right now, as we know, everything is made of atoms, and I don't know where you would put that signature. So it would have to take some real developments in quantum mechanics to find a way to sign things to verify that they were actually the original. Because, as you know, anything is made of atoms, and if you knew the pattern, you could make it out of more atoms, and it would be a duplicate. As far as quantum mechanics and nanotechnology, right now, there are some applications in nanotech that tie into quantum mechanics, in particular that single-atom transistor I was talking about. But quantum mechanics is really a very, very different thing from nanotech. Nanotech effectively treats everything as Lego blocks or little building blocks like an Erector set. And quantum mechanics allows you to do things, very odd things with waves and particles and information, where systems can actually become fuzzy or overlap each other. I'm sure that as the nanotech develops, we'll find some extremely interesting things at the edge of both disciplines, but we're really not close enough at this point to say for sure.
Well, how does a single cell, a single atom, act as a transistor without a base, collector, and, you know, the three?
Actually, they change, for instance, the spin of the electron in its orbital or the energy state it's in. And so you can affect the state that the transistor is in. Electron spins can be changed or tagged. In fact, they found a way to store up to 1,000 different states on a single transistor by changing the spin states of the electrons.
This is it's really moving us into an entirely new area of physics altogether, isn't it?
Well, yes, it is, because we're reaching the boundaries of traditional materials and the pedestrian world, and now we're pushing down to a scale where materials themselves act in new ways that we haven't observed in reality. One of the things that makes quantum mechanics very difficult for people to understand is that the properties we see at that scale don't match anything we see in the pedestrian world. So in quantum mechanics, you can put a bunch of items in a box, you move the box, and half the items are still on the table. In the real world, we don't really see that happen.
All right, Sir Charles, hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. So many of us have always thought that to reach a world where the laws of physics that we operate under right now would no longer be operative in that manner, we'd have to go to another dimension where the laws of physics would be different. But nanotechnology would seem to offer the possibility of virtually altering the laws of physics in the dimension that we now live in. Think about that a little bit. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. Well, here I am. Indeed, the rain falls in Manila almost horizontally. It's really come down. We've got another tropical storm here. They seem to come one after the other after the other. John in Kennewick, Washington asks or says, I guess the question is, can you replicate a soul? with nanotechnology or any other technology. And I don't think we're going to have the answer to that, John. We will nevertheless ask. My guest is incredible, Sir Charles Schulz III, back in a moment. About this, I the sole question is just too hard, but if nanotechnology could virtually duplicate anything, then one would presume even a human being when it's fully matured. So another Britney Spears, just like that, Sir Charles?
It could be done, certainly, but if you had access to the original to start with, and a copy of all the memories and thoughts and everything, when you made the duplicate, it would think it was the original, and you'd have just as little control over it as you did the original.
Well, whether your Britney had a soul or not might not be important.
I guess it depends on what your application for one is.
Yeah, I guess it is. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Sir Charles Schulz. Hello.
Wow.
Hello, hello.
That was interesting. this is Wade, and I'm calling from Kansas.
Yes.
I'm thinking that there's a good possibility that the developers of this technology would want to kind of keep this as a part of an elite society.
Mm-hmm.
They might be greedy and not let other people get hold of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd have utopia for some and not for others.
Uh-huh. It really is a very good point, Sir Charles. That would be an immediate thought of anybody who developed something like this or matured it, that they, you know, the complications of it getting out and out of your hands would probably cause you to not let it out.
Well, you know, everything can be hacked, and anybody who knows anything about it knows that no matter what you build, somebody else can make something else out of it. Whatever you can conceive of, somebody with the right tools will be able to modify it or make their own. And it happens all the time. Look at video games alone and how complex they are, and people have hacked them.
It's true.
Nanotech is just the ultimate video game.
Boy, that's one way to think of it, I suppose. All right, let's go to the first-time caller line. Say hi, you're on the air with Sir Charles.
Hi there.
Hello. Hi.
Hi, I'm Zach Bullard. I'm 18, and I'm a student, and I wanted to become a nanotechnologist one day. And a great show, by the way, Art. I have two quick comments and one very quick question. Now, a good movie to see regarding, you know, dying and being immortal and having your body resurrected is Zardoz. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
I've not.
Another quick comment is regarding the gold nanoparticles. I've always heard that in reference to cancer, using that, you know, to attach to cancer particles and mm-hmm. put the infrared rays over there to, you know, fry them away and leave the healthy tissue. I haven't heard of it in Alzheimer's, but I heard in rats it has an extremely high efficiency rating, like, you know, 90 to 95%, you know, right now today, which is amazing. And also regarding the fabrication machines, you know, the fab machines for short, but what is Sir Charles... how would you turn, like, say, lead to gold? That would require the manipulations of the protons and the atoms, and I don't think that nanotechnology has the tools to do that today, right?
That's absolutely correct. Whatever you make with nanotech would use the same elements you started with. So if you didn't have any gold to start with, you certainly wouldn't have any at the end of the process. But that brings us to another thing, and it kind of relates to the quantum mechanics question. It's called femtotechnology, which is an even smaller scale than nanotechnology.
Hmm.
Femtotechnology is 1,000 times smaller than nanotechnology, and it would involve direct manipulation of the particles inside the atoms.
God.
And so when we get to the stage where nanotech is developed, you can expect that there will be inroads in femtotechnology soon, which would mean that the conversion of one element to another could possibly be achieved.
All right, Sir Charles, what about his initial question? It wasn't a question. He said he wanted to get into this field. If somebody thinks what they've heard this morning is amazing and they want to head toward this field, how do they do it? What field of study do they begin? Where do they go?
You know, I would suggest that the very first thing to do is get online and see everything about nanotech you can and find the universities that are most doing the research in it, because there are literally hundreds of centers of research in the universities right now. But what you will need to understand is the periodic table of the elements. Get yourself some good basic math, chemistry, and physics. And once you've done that, then you can begin to specialize. Do you want to go into the biological end, or the materials processing end, or the electronics end? Because right now, nanotech is divided into a number of fields because each of the researchers is concentrating on specific things. One group made a car, a nano car that's just a couple of molecules shut together, and it has a motor that drives with light, and it's a light-powered vehicle that can carry materials around on a nanoscale for them.
Wow.
Some is in power storage, some is in medical technology and biology. So you really have to decide what it is you're going to concentrate on, general nanotech like manufacturing or some application that goes into a medical field. But it all really hinges on your understanding of physics and the elements and chemistry and possibly even computing because of how it's going to be controlled.
Sir Charles, what do you think is going to be the first nanotechnologically produced item that we can walk into a Walmart or anywhere else and buy?
Oh, displays. Definitely displays on electronic devices like the iPods or the other small PDAs. They've already come up with what they call digital paper, which is made with nanoparticles in a matrix that allows you to create a display that looks almost exactly like paper. Of course, the downside of that is you're going to be getting junk mail with animation and graphics on it now.
International Line, you're on the air with Sir Charles. Hi. Hello? International Line, you're on the air. At least I think you're on the air. Maybe I didn't push the button right. Let me try it again. International Line, now I think you're on the air. Well, no, you're not.
They had other ideas.
Apparently. International Line, one last time. Are you there?
Hi, Art. This is Justin from Winnipeg.
Hey.
Hey, how's it going? Hi, Sir Charles. I just had one question. I was just wondering, how would this be used maybe on animals or something like that?
Well, once again, it's all going to depend on your application.
Yeah.
You know, I imagine that you could make tags for pets with nanotechnology that could be absolutely identified, but also, if you have a pet and you want to be able to identify it anywhere, you can actually take a genetic sample. They have a laboratory on a chip, laboratory on a coin. They have systems they're coming out with now that have the ability to do a complete DNA analysis in a matter of minutes by applying a sample that's so tiny you can't even see it. And they're talking like less than a nanogram of material being able to analyze everything in it and quantify everything in it. So it wouldn't surprise me if in the very near term we start seeing systems that will identify a pet by its actual genetic code.
Okay, I hope that answers your question. So eventually, and not too far in the future, we are going to be able to go in and we're going to actually be able to buy something or another, right?
Yes, absolutely. I expect that it's going to be out pretty soon. Already people are injecting tagging chips in their animals. And so I do expect that we're going to see it. It'll probably be one of the standard tools that law enforcement or animal control will have within a few years.
Okay, let's go to one of the wild card lines. Hello there, you're on the air with Sir Charles Schultz.
Hi, okay. My name's Freddie, and I'm from Austin, Texas.
Yes, sir.
I had a question. If humans were allowed to live forever, like you were talking about, That would mean that our brains would stop evolving, and we possibly couldn't get any smarter. And what would happen if, say, we lived for 1 million years? What would happen to the hard drive in our head once it got full? Would we forget things, or would we not be able to learn more?
Okay, that's a very good question, and it's one that I've given some thought to. As we experience things, we often forget a lot of our earlier memories, or they become fuzzier. As we refine our knowledge of things, we reach a point where we get a better understanding. But if we lived so long that the number of experiences we had exceeded our storage, we really wouldn't have a place to put it, and we probably would become quite forgetful about it. Now, yes, the evolution of the brain stops, but with nanotechnology, you have the ability to install memory upgrades or expansion or download what you know and save it somewhere. So it really doesn't mean that it's an end as far as your understanding and intelligence goes. I would well imagine that we'd end up like with a personal digital assistant in our head that has the storage capacity of 1,000 lifetimes, perhaps.
You there, caller? Okay, I guess not. Anyway, that's certainly a good answer. Let's go west of the Rockies and say, hello there, you're on the air with Sir Charles Schultz.
Hi, Arbel. Hi, Charles. I'm Tim from Medford, Oregon. I was curious, could nanotechnology end up becoming evil a lot like Borg technology from Star Trek?
Well, it very well could. There are a lot of things that we could do with nanotech that we couldn't do any other way. And a lot of the things that people see in the Star Trek series and movies could actually be duplicated using nanotechnology. So, yes, I could see where we could have new materials, you know, foods, the ability to replicate materials that we haven't even thought of. Everything you ever need would essentially be a blueprint of the computer, and you just order it and have it made right away. So, sure.
Okay.
And we could have the holodeck technology that you mentioned, you know, that was mentioned, that could easily be done. We've got, in fact, a new material, a metamaterial that's coming out very shortly that will allow for something called a negative index of refraction. This is an optical term. And it means that the material would work counterintuitively with light, that you could project a scene into the material and it would materialize above the material. So you could actually make those floating in midair holographic displays, quite likely. And we're going to be seeing some tests of those materials in the next year or two.
Isn't there some danger, Sir Charles, that with a holodeck type of technology, I don't know, that we would we'd all sort of disappear into a video game-like play world, and our arms literally would be hanging by our sides?
Well, we're seeing the beginnings of that right now with the video games we've got as they become better and more engaging. So,
that's absolutely right.
We're going to see a lot of people who will just drop out of reality.
Huh. That is happening right now. There are people totally hooked on video games. So as it becomes, I don't know, more and more real to us, it just seems to me that we're going to lose more and more people. Let's go to the east of the Rockies line and say hello there. You're on there with Sir Charles Schultz.
Thank you. I must say I'm a bit of a skeptic when it comes to advanced nanotech beyond just better materials in bulk, because at that scale, a droplet of water is like an ocean of molasses or glue. A dust mote is an asteroid, a dust mite is Godzilla, and heat is death. For Brownian motion alone would make nanotech construction at that scale like getting Norm Abram and Bob Vila to build a two-story brownstone on Omaha Beach while being shelled. I mean, if nanotech is like the sails of John Carpenter's Thing, the ambient environment is going to be like the Blob. It's going to be very hostile to it. I mean, if I were to trying to get nanotech to, say, split a boulder in half, would be like trying to give every man in China a shovel and say, okay, now go dig the world in two. I mean, it all sounds to me like pixie dust from dejected scientists who say lament of our space program and tired of being rejected themselves. They come up with this pixie dust, this nano pixie dust, and they plant it, and it's all going to happen without any funds for big science. I think we need to spend more money on heavy industry. If you want to go to Mars, say you'll go to Mars with Griffin's Ares 5, not with Rutan's ME-163 comet. If you want to terraform Venus, you got to blow off half its atmosphere and not deposit little nano pixie dust that's going to vaporize in a puff of smoke. I mean, even the Venera super probe the Soviets put down is probably just a corroded pool of metal. I really doubt whether nanotech is going to be useful at all.
Well, consider this. All of the hardware inside your cells is natural, biological nanotech. What we will be doing is building nanotech that is a little more durable and a little more flexible than what nature has already done.
Yeah, but how many millions of years does it take? I mean, I think nanotech, the gray goo, would probably be no quicker than fungi. I mean, we have this idea, I think some of the nanotech folks have, of just planting something, and just something just kind of foams up before your eyes. I'm not buying it. I think we really need to get out of the lab and start supporting heavy industry. We're always going to have need for lays and the brute force approach, and I really think we're fooling ourselves on this scale, because it took a long time just to get things done at a cellular level, and that's for things that kind of work with an environment. And if you try to have these small little these mechanisms, I just don't see it. I really don't.
Well, the advantage we have over natural evolution is this. Nature did things at random, and whatever worked survived and duplicated. But we have the ability to direct our thoughts and our efforts on specific results, and we can accomplish it in a matter of years as opposed to millions of years. So because we have the ability to choose where we directing our efforts, we can look for specific tools and build them as we see fit, just like the lasers and anything else.
The laws of physics don't change. Let me give you an example. The radio durance. That's a very small little bug, if you will, Art. But the only way it's able to survive such hostile radioactive environments is because it doesn't do much. If you have something that's very complex, that does more and more things, the more vulnerable it is. I mean, let me give you an example. If I wanted to have nanobots try to split a boulder dead in two, it'd be like all the guys in China trying to dig the world in two. I could actually go at the sub-nano level directly with chemicals and try to dissolve it. But, you know, if I really want to split that boulder, give me a hammer and a chisel, and I'll do it lickety-splat.
Well, but nothing says that nano can't use the same forces of physics.
Yeah, it'll take 100 years to do it. It'll take 100 years for those little nanobots to split that thing. I don't buy it. I'm just don't.
But consider that you can have an almost unlimited number of them working on the project simultaneously. So there are some advantages to either process, absolutely. Yeah. But you can bet that as we make progress, we're going to discover new things we never understood by studying nanotechnology.
For inert materials, maybe in a very controlled environment, you try to put them out there by themselves and just be like, you know, trying to get a 105-year-olds trying to dig a mountain in two. They just can't do it.
Well, you know, if it turns out that nanotech is not a viable technology, we'll find out real fast. And if it's something that doesn't survive in the world as a whole and in the environment, that might actually be to our advantage because it could prevent the gray goose scenario.
Yeah, How much of a possibility, Sir Charles, is it that nanotech is just flat going to fail? I mean, obviously, this caller's a doubter. How much of a possibility is there?
Well, consider that we can make machines using metals and ceramics that can survive conditions that organic molecules will not. If we convert that sort of information and structure down to the nanoscale, we could make microscopic robots that are far more durable than cells. And, you know, the bottom line is, we're going to find out what's going to work best. And I do believe that nanotech will work because it works at the very fundamental level. Consider that to split a boulder in half, you don't have to take a 3-centimeter wide strip out of it. You only need to take a few molecule wide strip right out of the middle. And nano is very suited for that.
You still need brute force. I mean, I think when it comes to inert materials, I hope I'm wrong. I really do. I mean, the gray goose scenario probably won't work. I really think that nanotech, even if it got out of control, would be like a general nuisance, something that wouldn't dissolve things. It'd be like extra bad moon dust and might get up under your plastic and eat it away. But, you know, good old-fashioned grit would do that too. I mean, I want us to have a futuristic society. I really do. I'm not a technophobe. I think technophobia is humanity's greatest threat. I think we're trapped between two parties, one of which wants to give us all a collective lobotomy and, you know, send us back into the dark age, and other guys want to cut off our opposable thumbs, shoot us some kneecaps for us to lose our bipedal stance, and, you know, put us back.
All right, caller, I wish you'd been here a little bit earlier. I've got to cut you off because we're totally out of time. Sir Charles, it has been astounding. I mean, it's just been an astounding show, and I guess it's an astounding future we probably have in front of us. I wish we'd had that caller a little bit earlier in the show, and I would have liked to have continued that debate. But listen, is there any website you'd like to quickly plug or book or whatever?
Well, of course, there's my Xenotech Research website that everybody's seen, and a lot of the new findings are posted there. I'm having a page put up on my site about my book very shortly, and I'm going to send you a couple of chapters to read up front because we discussed a little of that. And other than that, I'm good.
All right, buddy. Thank you so much for a wonderful show. You have a wonderful week ahead. And from the other side of the world, Sir Charles, take care. Everybody else out there, also, see you next weekend. Good night, all.